These last few weeks, I've been thinking a lot about legacies. We've had funerals recently for two men who were a huge part of the fabric of this congregation for decades. George announced he's retiring, but not before getting us through a major update and upgrade to our pipe organ. And we're busy planning for our 150th anniversary as a parish, which is just a couple of weeks away. And so the question that's been stuck in my head is, how do I and how do we leave this place better than we found it? It's tough. You're going to hear more from Randy, our treasurer, later about some of the financial challenges we face. For example, we have this gorgeous building that quite frankly costs us roughly one arm and one leg to maintain, heat, and insure. But it's not just about money, and we know that. We also live in a culture where families have more challenges for their time and energy than perhaps ever before. And we have a political climate that I think makes us doubt whether truth is even a real thing. And that makes preaching the gospel kind of tricky. But yet, the church persists. Do you know why? Because it's not ours, thank God. The psalmist reminds us that it was God who built this place. Otherwise, all of our labors today would be in vain. And they're clearly not, because we've been doing good things despite all of the challenges. We've partnered with Exodus to provide three families with everything they need to make a home here. We've helped Bishop Anderson House raise funds for their chaplaincy programs at Stroger. We regularly provide meals to beds clients who are unhoused. We'll be doing it again soon, but we collect Christmas presents for children who would otherwise have nothing to open. We formed a team to promote anti-racism and diversity programs, both in the church and in the community. And that, my friends, is just this year. So what is our legacy? I think it's doing the best we can to make the world a better place for the poor, the widows, the orphans, and the aliens. Not for the sake of appearances like the scribes that Jesus criticized, but because we believe it's what God intends for God's church. Through that lens, today's gospel reading does not provoke the stewardship kickoff sermon that you might expect. I'm not going to ask you to pull the last two coins out of your pockets. Instead, I invite you to look for a moment at the painting on the cover of your bulletin. Late in his career, Tissot had a religious experience that had made him rediscover his faith. And he spent the rest of his life after that depicting biblical scenes. He made several trips to Egypt, Syria, and Palestine to make them as accurate and realistic as possible. And in the background, there's a wealthy man putting his offering into the temple collection box. But hardly anyone even notices, and it must drive him crazy. In fact, the only person who does appear to notice is the man on the very left. And although Tissot never told us, there is some speculation that that may be Judas coveting all that money. Instead, the focus of both the artist and the crowd is on the poor widow who presumably just dropped in her meager offering. Tissot paints her with a child, which would have made her even more vulnerable in that time. She's rushing away, avoiding eye contact. She seems to be coming off the page and right out into our world. The crowd is watching her leave, and Jesus, who's sitting third from the left, appears to be pointing at her, almost holding her up as an example. Because as Mark wrote in his gospel, she gave everything she had. In the Greek, it is quite literally that she gave her whole being, her whole life. And that is what I'm calling us to this morning and this stewardship season, to be all in, to choose a side, to give sacrificially of our very selves, not out of a sense of obligation or pride, but out of love for each other, love for the world, and love for the ones the world does not love. And I know that we can do this if we walk in love together. Amen.